Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy, 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 happy anniversary.
All right, knock it off.
You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 17th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Dick Black's Rape Joke Gotham Writers Workshop, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
His name is Dick Black.
Dick Black, yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Who's there? Rape.
Rapity, rape, rape, rape.
Rape, rape,
this
rape.
Is, I'm sorry if that to jump right into that right away, because that might be
triggering
really
for
triggering
some people.
Offensive.
And I apologize, too, because it's disgusting.
But, geez, there must be memos circulating out there underneath all the memos, all the fake camouflage memos.
Man.
About rebranding that say, remember, never stop talking about legitimate rape. Never stop talking about how women are basically there for your use.
Yeah.
And they can't fucking shut up about it. It's just amazing.
So Dick Black is a candidate for Congress.
Uh-huh.
Guess which party, everybody.
In what blue state is he running in the Democrat Party?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
My bad.
Is he running in North Carolina? Virginia.
Yeah.
Dick Black from Virginia.
Yeah.
Where they've already elected a Democratic slate of all five top statewide offices are now held by Democrats because the number one issue in the election was abortion.
Yeah. So we're going
to. And so Dick Black's running for Congress, and he wanted to point out to people that marital rape is a misnomer, and that shouldn't be illegal, because what if she's lying next to you in her nightie?
Right. Then what are you going to do? I mean, it's not like you've got control over that. You got to put it in somewhere, and you know that's why you put a ring on that.
That's why you put a ring on her, so that you can just stick it in there.
You know, I don't know what to say other than this is the end product of a very long process of careful sorting and grooming and breeding to create people like this on the right.
Yep.
And everybody knows someone like this, or everybody has an uncle like this, or everybody gets emails from Crazy Uncle Liberty that has shit like this in it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not kidding. You know, it would be one thing if this were just the worst extended
performance art yes.
in history. Yeah. Like at some point in 2020, they say, we were just kidding. It was just a big joke.
We wanted to see how much we could get away with and still have the Congress.
And then it turns out Andy Kaufman has been running GOP from the grave
from
the moon for the last 30 years. That would be, other than the damage they've done, that would be hilarious. But it's not. This isn't a joke. They just open their mouth and out comes what they really think about guns and women and poor people and communist America hating liberals like you and I.
And gays.
And people look at that. There's millions and millions of Americans who look at that and say, yes, I would like that asshole in Washington because he's a real American and he'll stop those Washington insiders from something, something, something. I have no doubt he's going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
But that he exists at all and can actually become a viable candidate in any election anywhere says an awful lot about what the GOP has done. And what they continue to do. This is not an accident. This is on purpose.
And again, we apologize that we had to open our show with that. But happy anniversary, Driftglass.
Happy anniversary.
This is our fourth anniversary show. And it's not going to be any different from our regularly scheduled program.
No.
Except to say happy anniversary.
Yeah, it's fourth. We've been doing this for 4 years.
Yeah.
Every week.
Well, just about. Yeah.
Just about every week.
Yeah. Certainly for the past couple of years, we've done it every week. Yeah. So
we've outlasted Martin Bashir. About last Keith Olbermann.
Keith Olbermann.
Dylan Radigan. Dylan who?
We have a collection of MSNBC coffee mugs.
We do.
All the people every time a show gets canceled, we go onto the NBC Universal website and order one mug.
And one of these days, we're just going to do a
countdown mug. We have an Up with Chris Hayes mug. And yeah. So
countdown mug, yeah.
Countdown mug.
Yeah. And one of these days, we're just going to do a slow pan of them with some sad Sarah McLachlan.
Sarah McLachlan, please save the MSNBC hosts.
You know what? Those who've left us this year. Yeah. So we've outlasted a lot. We've outlasted a lot of radio shows. And by the way, progressive radio is in, you know, terrible trouble. We'll talk about that some other day. But it's, you know, they could really use some more progressive voices on bigger stations with more muscle is all I'm saying. See? So.
And so happy anniversary, dear class.
Happy anniversary. You know what I love for anniversary? Just as a little token, a little gift. What? Money. Love money. Usually I just mention, you know, that we talk about there's a PayPal account at the beginning of the podcast and we don't burden people. By the way, as a complete aside, I have been getting lots of solicitations on my site for ads. People who want me to write advertorials or slide ads. Apparently, I've reached the point where...
Interesting. I didn't know. I'm not getting those. Yeah. Wow.
You know, I've got this fine product.
Is this offer for you? Oh, wow. Well,
these are, you know, pennies on the dollar. You know, I'll pay you $70 a year if you'll advertise my, you know, camouflage.
On your site.
Yeah.
I mean, on your site because...
On my site.
Oh, see, I'm not updating my blog often enough for that to happen.
But it's, you know, it's... So we don't have any ads on our podcast. I don't have any ads on my... website on my blog at all.
Well, and you know, you mentioned that. How about this, Driftglass? How about we ask our listeners, and here are the conditions.
Lagavulin?
Here are the conditions.
Send me
you
one.
Have a job,
uh-huh.
Or you have a source of income. You can afford, we always say, if you can afford an espresso-based beverage for yourself.
Yes.
And this week we'll ask if you've never given before that you send us $4. $1 a year for our podcast.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
Yeah. If you've never given before, if you've already given before, hey, you've done your bit.
And if you're moved to give us $10 a year or $100 a year
$400 or $1,000,
that's fine too. We don't turn those away.
We don't have those levels of giving, Drift.
We convert those fictional contributions into food and various other products that are useful.
Yeah.
No, so I usually don't pitch. I don't know what possessed me to do it today, but
we're not a fundraising operation. We are a change the world podcasting operation.
Despite and the reason for that is my lovely wife and sound editor and talent on this show taps the brakes every time I suggest we sell out immediately for.
Yes, I do. I say, wait a minute.
You know,
will you be able to look in the mirror tomorrow morning if we do that? No, I won't.
You know. Oh, I'm just saying.
I get fundraising emails. You get you get Dear Drift, right?
I get Dear Drift.
I get Dear Frank.
Frank.
A gay organization.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that's really wild.
Yeah. Well, and you got a letter from Shimkus, so we'll get to that in a little bit. I get $3 or $4 solicitations to Drift who thank me for all I do from about four times a day. And it's I read them now as Dear Drift, and it's always a good cause. It's nothing I would, you know, look down my nose at, but it's so mechanical. It's Dear Drift. Can you believe those fuckers? Blah, 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 blah. $4. Thank you for all you do. And it's okay, you know.
I also want to let our listeners know about another date coming up, March 5th.
Uh-huh.
Wednesday, March 5th.
Yes.
That's the beginning of Lent.
Yes.
Are you gonna celebrate Lent the way you have done so in the past?
I haven't really been... My celebration of Lent last year has weaned me, not weaned me off, but really gotten me a little less highly focused on Mr. David Brooks, for example.
Driftglass, the past couple of years, has given up writing about David Brooks and talking about David Brooks for Lent.
For Lent.
For the 40 days of Lent.
Yeah. And
March 5th, I just want, if you decide to do it, from March 5th to April 17th is Lent.
He hasn't really.
It's not Lent yet.
Well, let me put it this way.
Yeah.
There was a long stretch there where David Brooks was on book leave.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, and he's been really.
And we had a wonderful tweet from one of our listeners about that every time he goes to use the bathroom and goes number two, he calls that going on book leave.
Going on book leave. Oh,
and,
man.
And then another person tweeted, but if you do that, you have to use both sides of the toilet paper.
Yes, you do. And Mr. Brooks has come roaring back with a lot of really bad writing. So.
Well, and he's come to the defense of Chris Christie, apparently.
He has.
Tell me about that.
Which was quite remarkable. And of course, underreported. Because he lives in that little universe of a small group of people, maybe 40 or 50 people, who are unfireable. Everyone's worked in an organization with somebody who cannot be fired.
Yep.
And usually you can figure out what the deal is.
Oh, yeah. Their husband works in upstairs in the director's office.
Yeah.
She's not going to get fired.
And I worked in a place where one of the many unfireable people, I had never seen them. I'd worked there for 8 years. I'd never seen them. They never came in. They were just on the payroll for some payoff for something they did.
Were they working for the CIA?
No.
Like that just, guy who claimed just, he was just
oh, yeah.
the CIA I, and stayed home yeah. and read books?
my new hero. No, there are in every organization, there are people who are just, you know, if you're lucky, one of the older, wiser, more battle-scarred individuals will take you aside and say, just don't screw with John. Just don't screw with Susie.
Yeah.
They're protected. They have clout. They're
well, and I worked with someone. She was wonderful, and she actually was a good worker.
Uh-huh.
But her husband had been hired by the director's office, and as a condition of him coming in, they had to give her a job.
Yeah. This is
now she was the rarity that she was qualified to do the job had and was a good coworker. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes you just have somebody that's sitting on their butt eating bonbons, and you know they're there because they have somebody upstairs.
Yeah. Oh, I've worked with someone who was working there because they had given state's evidence.
Wow. Yeah.
And they essentially part of their very quiet plea deal was, we'll find you a job.
Yeah.
It'll put you in some little corner of some place.
You'll have a desk and a paycheck.
And he was really good at his job. So it was like, wow, this guy, you know, he was like a disgraced nuclear scientist working at in Radio Shack.
Yeah.
It was, wow, you really are just incredibly gifted. Mm-hmm. But that was why he was there. That was part of the reason why he was untouchable right up until the minute when the entire political script flipped unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
The same people who put him there.
Fired him.
Fired his ass. You know, so don't expect.
And had nothing to do with him.
No, but the rules of the game.
Changed.
The person who he had been instrumental in putting away suddenly had the ability to exact revenge on people who had done that. So suddenly all the promises about him keeping this and being secure from that if he cooperated evaporated.
Wow.
It's just out. So there's a whole different set of rules for people like that.
But Chris Christie and David Brooks, let's get to that.
And David Brooks and you can usually suss out what the deal is.
Mm-hmm.
No, nobody can quite figure out why David Brooks gets to get away with being such a shitty writer and being so wrong about everything. But what makes it at least modestly entertaining for people like me, and I don't know that there are many people like me, but there's one at least,
Charlie Pierce.
Me and Charlie Pierce, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was on the Chris Hayes show. So good for you, Charlie Pierce. You did a good job. Is sort of predicting the blowback or the reaction to his latest incredibly stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's zero. There's never any consequence. There's never any blowback. He can be as wrong as he wants, as often as he wants. So he is one of the rare people who's basically said, what Washington needs is a bully. I kind of admire that, you know, unless, of course, it comes out that he's actually a criminal and actually had people, you know, buried under the bridge or something. He didn't say that. I'm just exaggerating for dramatic purposes. But he really rose to his defense and said, essentially, you know, during times when government doesn't work, or as I put it, there's no problem that Republican thugs haven't created that David Brooks believes GOP thugs can't solve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate and rise to David Brooks's defense for a moment.
You use that mouth to kiss your husband? Really? Really?
And by the way, I promise never to quote Liz Cheney in bed ever again.
Thank you.
As a mother and a patriot. Whoa.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa.
I gotta go now.
Yeah, that couch is looking mighty comfy.
But getting back to David Brooks,
uh-huh.
One person that you could accuse of being a bully in that regard is LBJ.
Sure.
So I can see the point of but here's the problem: they've gotten rid of earmarks. They've gotten rid of all of the Tea Party has gotten rid of things that would be used to twist the arm of congressmen to do what you say you can do. That's why the Speaker of the House has no power anymore. And they've done that deliberately.
Yeah.
So I don't see that just, you know, LBJ's personality or Chris Christie's personality alone is not enough to get stuff done. Plus the fact that David Brooks always wets his panties anytime we're talking about the big strong man.
Oh yeah, he's an authoritarian from way back. He and Bill Kristol used to write about national greatness conservatism
mm-hmm.
in a very creepy fascistic kind of way. Yeah. And every 3 to 6 months, he has a new column about the coming conservative renaissance that's right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it never actually arrives, but it's always going to be led by a man on a horse leading us to a great cause because great men can blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why he loved Ronald Reagan. That's why he loved George Bush right up until he forgot his name and pretended that he never wrote what he wrote.
I'm sure he loved Nixon for the same reason. I mean,
yeah, well, you know, he was
a Republican great man, you know.
I have not gotten the money together to go to the Washington Examiner archives and look at his early columns, but they're there. I'm sure they're just as bad as they are now. But LBJ bullied especially Southern white Democrats.
Exactly.
Now, if David Brooks wants to write a column saying that the problem with Congress is that the Republican Party is crazy and they've destroyed it, and
they need a Republican bully to come in and put them right and say, fuck you, I did put my arm around Barack Obama,
yeah,
then okay. But that's not what he said.
That's not – he never says that. He never – ever says that. What he says is Washington is dysfunctional. The Congress is dysfunctional. Yeah. Both sides.
Yeah.
And so he's a liar on a fundamental existential level.
Mm-hmm.
And he is stuck with that lie. Yeah. He can't. I mean, the first lie was George Bush is a great president and liberals are traitors.
Mm-hmm.
That was his shtick for most of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
Then that went completely tits up on him. And then he had to find the new lie to tell. And he just very quickly flipped over to both sides. And in that interim, he relied on his colleagues who were all equally guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the fact that he'd written all this shit that all the new stuff completely contradicts. Yeah. So now his entire métier is both sides. Both sides are always bad. It's always Washington. It's always this great big social movement.
Which also feeds into the lie from Marco Rubio of big government is the problem. Yeah.
And I watched briefly on my liberal TV this morning. I watched I forget who they were, and forgive me for forgetting, but it was one former Republican and one former Democrat talking about how awful it is that it's broken down and comity is broken down and nobody wants to cooperate and the blue dogs are now starved. And isn't it terrible that people, that Congress, that the extremes on both sides, that the redistricting on both sides, that the extreme liberals and the extreme conservatives on both sides. And really, it just is so exhausting.
Well, and Chuck Todd this week wondered aloud why Harry Reid hadn't done more compromisey things in order to get unemployment extended. Yeah. What? Well, and I want to talk about Charlie Cook and Chris Christie. I want to get Chris Christie out of the way.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Podcast, because Charlie Cook's attitude toward Chris Christie is similar to mine, but there's a slight difference. Charlie Cook is essentially saying, forget about this bridge thing. The Tea Party hates Chris Christie, so he'd had no chance of being elected anyway.
Yeah.
And my attitude is, don't forget the bridge crisis. The people of New Jersey and New York should be investigating to the hilt and finding out what happened and prosecuting wherever necessary. But Chris Christie never had the disposition to run for president. And and that was before this happened. This is a symptom, not a disease.
Yeah. And those two very critical thresholds touch on subjects that are so terrifying and so career ending.
Yeah. For to the people like media. Yeah.
To people like David Brooks, that he's never going to talk. You can never talk about the fact that the Republican Party as it really exists, not the fantasy version that he has in his head that he is constantly trying to sell, but the real Republican Party that he helped create.
Former Dixiecrats, racists.
Yeah. On purpose.
Yep, absolutely.
On purpose. And they hate people like Chris
Christie. And supply-siders who want to just rake in the money from the government and screw poor people. Yep.
And the idea that, okay, we built this party that now hates people like Chris Christie. So A, he's never going to make it through the primary process. Mm-hmm. And then B, once he gets into office, the entire Republican Party will rip him to pieces if he ever got that far. And they never would because they'd never vote for him. So the fantasy of a Chris Christie president is him just floating into office somehow without ever having to contact real Republican voters.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you start talking about the base of the party that David Brooks and people like him helped create, then you open up a whole bunch of questions about why did you do that? And have you noticed that liberals were right about that and you were wrong? And those are questions. This goes back to a theme I'm starting to touch on more and more often, which is why it is fundamentally useless to debate conservatives.
Yeah.
Because they will not talk about that. They will always divert and deflect the subject to, yeah, but the Democrats or both sides, because they can't. They are literally in a place where they cannot talk about that.
Yep.
Because if
I also think that that determines how Democrats should communicate.
Which is
their you need to find absolutes that you can communicate to voters and let the Republicans prevaricate on your absolutes. For instance, I believe as a Democrat that every person in America who turns on their faucet should be able to drink that water and be safe.
Yes. Period.
Period. Uh-huh. And I represent the party of clean drinking water for all Americans.
You mean socialist drinking water, don't you?
Well, no. Yeah, right. No, and just wait for the Republicans to say, yeah, but.
Mm-hmm.
And they will. You know, overregulation and blah, 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 blah. No.
If you let them, I can do that. If you would let the marketplace handle the problem of water, I'm sure
that to the people in West Virginia and Ohio.
Yeah, well, that really was an example of overregulation and government interference in the natural.
The chemical plant that wasn't inspected since 1991.
Well, clearly that was a problem with the local government.
Let the voters decide that that's the case.
Yeah, well,
I'm going to say, as a Democrat, that my goal is to make sure that every person in America can turn on their faucet and feed that water to their children safely. That's my goal. Absolutely.
And the rebuttal will be, yeah, sure, we can all agree to that. But what about Benghazi?
And then you're done. Yeah, you're off.
You're never going to bait them into discussing anything rationally because the world is full of landmines.
The reason people died in Benghazi is there wasn't enough water to put the fire out.
Yeah, that's true.
All right.
The world is nothing but a ocean of landmines for conservatives. There's a jillion topics they don't dare touch.
Yep.
So they have this one way through, and the one way through is deny everything, deflect everything onto whatever their scandal is today, and never ever talk about the past.
Well, let's dovetail right into John Shimkus and then wheel back to Mo Publicans.
Yeah.
Right? John Shimkus, congressman from Illinois, congressman from Big Coal.
Yep.
I'm still on his newsletter email list for one more week. we'll see what happens after this week.
Yeah.
But he caught my attention this week because the subject line of his email was flurry of activity.
We're doing stuff.
We're not the do nothing Congress. Oh, no way. Look at this.
We're very active.
And the first bill he talked about supporting is the Obamacare is not transparent act.
Yes.
And it requires this is so funny.
Uh-huh.
It requires the federal government to inform the public within 2 days if any of the information from the exchanges is breached.
Uh-huh.
The personal information, the personal health information, The Obamacare website doesn't request any personal health information.
No, it doesn't.
So this bill makes no sense. However, it allows John Shimkus to put in his newsletter, the administration's insistence that everything is secure is rightfully met with skepticism.
Sure.
And this bill is only applicable to the Obamacare exchanges as the government website is indicated. That's it. It's not selective service. It's not Medicaid. It's not Medicare. It's not any other place where you give the government information.
Oh, it's not Target.
Specifically targeted towards healthcare.gov.
And it's not private industry. It's not those dozens of companies that have had their websites breached and your information stolen.
No. Yeah. And it's not, as I heard on the radio this morning, it's not solo health. No. Which is this computer kiosk that is in Walmart and other fine retailers, as they put it.
Yeah.
Where you sit down and answer a bunch of health questions.
HAL 9000 asks you a bunch of questions.
You sit down, they take your blood pressure, they ask you if you smoke, they ask you if you drink, they ask you if you've been depressed in the past 30 days. Does your family have any history of heart disease,
This is a completely automated kiosk.
Automated.
It's a robot asking these questions.
And it's free to the customer. And
sure.
How are you funding it? Well, we were funding it with advertising for pharmaceutical products.
Sure.
But now we found a new revenue stream, and we are providing the information gathered at these kiosks to insurers.
Oh, isn't that nice? That's so helpful.
And so they said, well, what about privacy? Said, oh, no, we discuss completely with Walmart and other fine retailers the importance of privacy.
Yes. Yes. And they understand the importance of privacy. Yep.
And the thing is, this once again underlines why we need single payer.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because, first of all, when you sit down at this kiosk, it weighs you.
Yeah.
By the way. So Blue Cross or whoever is buying this Aetna, whoever's buying this database from Solo Health.
With your information in it to be fed.
And at the end, if you want help applying for health insurance from a trusted professional, and they don't tell you it's an insurance agent, please enter your email and name here.
That is so helpful.
And they don't tell you it's an insurance agent will contact you. But an insurance agent isn't going to contact you if you weigh over 175 pounds and have high blood pressure. That's the, you know, they're going to cherry pick the healthy people.
Of course. That's why.
Once again, it's pre-existing conditions need not apply.
This is why insurance companies have actuarial departments and underwriters to make sure that.
It's the nature of the beast.
Right.
You only want to sell your product to healthy people, period.
Well, all I can say is, as a mother and a patriot, I'm proud to live in a country where, you know, we can trust Walmart data scooping robots.
Yeah.
But we have to pass special legislation to keep the government transparent on information that you never gave them.
That you never gave them in the first place. Yes. And then.
Thanks, John Shimkus.
Yeah. And then John Shimkus is also. What's the real name of Obamacare? It's the.
Affordable Care Act.
Affordable Care Act. Well, John Shimkus has borrowed that word affordability, which is great, for his House Resolution 3826, the Electricity Security and Affordability Act.
That sounds very good.
Yeah.
I would vote for that.
Electricity Security and Affordability? Oh, sure.
Everyone loves security and affordability, Blue Bell. Everyone, except socialists. But please continue.
This bill offers a reasonable alternative to the environmental protection agencies. Okay, I could just stop right there. Proposed greenhouse gas standards for new power plants. This bill would require that any greenhouse gas standards set by the Environmental Protection Agency for new coal-fired plants are able to be achieved by commercial power plants operating in the real world.
In the real world.
Now, here's the thing that just blew my mind.
Uh-huh.
The legislation also provides that Congress will set the effective date for the EPA's regulations.
Yeah. Half past never.
12th of never.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The EPA, you might as well just.
Here's a big sack of money.
I know they want to abolish the EPA anyway.
Here's a big sack of money, John Shimkus. Thank you, coal industry.
Yeah, because he is number one
in
terms of receipts from the coal industry. And he sits on the Energy and Power Subcommittee.
So his website had a misspelling. It was a slurry of activity, not a flurry of activity.
That's right.
You know, this is the everyday, day in, day out business of your Republican House of Representatives, trying to find new ways to fuck you, to take away your air, to take away your water, to subsidize the dirtiest industries in America for money.
And I want to make it clear, Driftglass.
Uh-huh.
This podcast is powered by coal.
It is.
It is. There's no doubt about it. When I turn on a light in our house, there's a coal plant that provided us with that energy.
Absolutely.
We don't choose what source is unless we start to really change rules around here.
Yeah.
And even if it costs more, which it shouldn't, because the sun and the wind
are forever.
We are forever. We
All
right. MoPublicans. You want to talk about MoPublicans?
I do. Because yesterday, if you were watching or listening to the radio or watching the television machine, you might have heard a little something about a guy named Jimmy LaSalvia. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy LaSalvia is, anthropologists believe, that he was the last gay Republican in America. We're not sure, like the dodo bird or the passenger pigeon or the moderate Republican. You never really know it's extinct until a generation has passed and there's no new ones anywhere. But it is quite possible that Jimmy LaSalvia, who calls himself a lifelong conservative activist who loves low taxes and limited government and continues to refer to my political party as the Democrat Party.
Oh, Lord.
Is also gay. And apparently, after being punched in the face by bigots for 30 years, it slowly dawned on him that the Republican Party is full of bigots. And not by accident. It's almost it was by design. So sick of being tiring of being a boot scraper for people who explicitly hate people like Jimmy LaSalvia, he's decided to boldly declare that he will no longer be a Republican.
Now let me guess, he's going to be an independent.
He's going to be independent. Conservative independent.
I don't know.
And that's a weight off his shoulders. That's a load off his shoulders. You know, I just couldn't deal with all these bigots in the Republican Party. So now I'm going to be a conservative independent. He still can't bring himself to deal with the Democratic Party, who he describes as unable to live in reality. So that'd be you and me, the left wing of the Democratic Party or Democrat Party.
Democrat Party.
Can't live in reality. And so he now feels a huge sense of freedom because he is an independent conservative. And as I wrote in my blog, and a little centrist shall lead them. And there was a lot of...
You had a good comment at those posts.
Oh, yeah. Well, that too. I mean, everyone loves their apostates. So this guy got airtime on the Lawrence O'Donnell show, leading me to think I really should have gone the other way completely and been a rabid gay activist in the Republican Party for years. Mm-hmm. At which point, I would be so fucking rich right now. Oh, I would be so large right now.
We would be so rich if we went and started podcasting for Michelle Malkin.
You
know, if you're willing to sell your soul, you can make money, sure. Uh-huh.
And I'm absolutely sure Mr. LaSalvia will go from making a good living as the gay Republican dancing monkey to the gay independent dancing monkey somewhere.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of money.
Anytime you have to talk about gays and Republicans, anytime a Republican is outed as a gay person or found in a gay hot tub time machine,
right,
this guy will be pulled out to be on the cycle. I mean, you know, he will.
And he will spend 3/4 of his time talking about the extreme left wing of the Democrat Party.
Well, absolutely.
And then talk about both sides and why can't we all get along on this one issue? Now, I'm hoping, I do have a little hope for him. I believe personally that he is irredeemable scum. Anybody who has sold out his own people, frankly, for this long for money. And it took him to the year of our Lord 2014 to discover the Republican Party is staffed with bigots, is such a whore, is such a completely self-deluded monster that he's one of those people like crazy Uncle Liberty who cannot face reality. Because let's face it, if he ever got doped up on truth serum and had to face, because he's a limited government and loves, you know, fiscal sanity. Mm-hmm. None of which the Republican Party has ever believed in.
They don't actually represent that. Yes.
And so if he had ever come to terms with the fact that he has been this big an asshole and this big of a chump and this big of a sellout, this big of an enabler of people who hate him and who stand firmly against it for years.
And on a principle that actually doesn't exist, because the Republican Party is not the party of fiscal responsibility.
No, I never have noticed. In case you haven't noticed, during your entire adult lifetime, that has never been true. So what choice would a person like that have if he were confronted with the totality of his hypocrisy, but to throw himself in front of a bus? I mean, how do you live with yourself being that big a traitor to everything you profess to believe in? So that's never going to happen. People like that cannot deal with reality. They can't face the truth. And there's a big market in giving someone like that, who's well-spoken and looks good on television, lots of money to be your pimp instead of their pimp.
Right.
But one of the commenters, anonymous commenters, pointed out that somewhere out there, Andrew Sullivan is reading this and growling in his best Walter White as Heisenberg voice, "Stay out of my territory." Because let's face it, Andrew Sullivan's job for years was to be the guy that rednecks pointed to say, "We got a gay." We got one.
And he's one of the good ones.
Of course, now Andrew Sullivan is making his living as an independent, real conservative / libertarian, which, you know, it's the Bush off machine. It's the Starbelly Sneeches. There's this mechanism in public life that permits people like this to graduate from being absolute Republican stooges to being independent conservatives, independent libertarians at any political price. Charlie Pierce, bless his heart, Charlie Pierce pointed out on the Chris Hayes show yesterday that if you go back and look at Iran-Contra, for example, you know, their actual war crimes, actual treason was committed by high government officials of the United States. Mm-hmm. And not one of them missed a beat in their political or media career, period. There's no downside for being this guy other than a couple of liberal bloggers sort of rolling their eyes and going, really, really? But he gets to now he gets to trade on his apostasy and become another centrist.
Become a truth teller.
Yeah. You know.
Because he broke with the Republican Party and now he's an independent.
Yes. 30 years too late, he woke up to the fact that
he's an independent.
Yeah. He's he's the Dave Chappelle, the blind Klansman.
Well,
black guy who's been blind from birth, who's a Klansman. I mean, and really, what level of self-loathing do you have to have? Self-deception and self-loathing to have gone on this long with people who make it a point to your face tell you how much they hate you and how much our party's built
or that we're praying for you to change and become godly. Yes. All
but
right.
Finally, it was too much.
It was
finally he'd had enough. So and again, he will go from being a conservative Republican activist to some no labels geek.
Yeah, he'll get a job with no labels. Sure.
Not missing us. David Frum did the same thing. Andrew Sullivan did the same thing. The people who sort of age out of the Republican Party, who were absolutely loyal stooges of the Bush administration, have no problem just stepping into a new career. And at no point are they.
You know what's going to happen too, Drew Glass? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you know what's going to happen too now? Michael Bloomberg is going to go, we got a gay.
Yeah. He's the last gay Republican, possibly. Farewell. I wish him well on his new endeavor. Again, in 2030 or 2040, as an old man, a very, very old man, he might wake up to the fact that, you know, I'm thinking maybe water is wet and gravity is a thing. And my God, Republicans really never gave a shit about deficits, did they? So I wish him well on his journey of self-discovery. He'll find that he'll land somewhere.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
I need to change the subject real quick.
Yeah, please.
We want to highlight a article that was sent to us by our friend Batoccio at the Vagabond Scholar. And it's not political, so to speak, although it has a lot of, I think, meaning for anyone interested in careers and ideas.
But I'll read this along with the video from Stan Lee giving advice to writers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They make a really good pair.
Yeah. We'll put this up at our Facebook page. It's the New York Review of Books, nybooks.com. If you look at their January archives, it's an article by Tim Parks called Writing to Win. And it's just an exploration of the difference between a published writer and someone who aspires to be published.
Yeah.
And the extent to which the latter is pulled up into the boat when someone becomes published.
Yeah.
And so I really like, too, what one of the commenters at this article said about Annie Lamott, who's one of my favorite writers. And this commenter said, success is what happens. This is what Annie Lamott says. Success is what happens inside you when you figure out finally what you want to say and how to find the words to say it. That's the transformation. The fame isn't even the icing on the cake. It's a letdown. And when I read that, I thought about you and I and this podcast and 4 years of podcasting. You and I have known for a while what we wanted to say, and we found a way to say it.
Yep.
And the success that comes from that, I mean, we are so grateful when we get a $4 or $5 contribution from someone or more. But really, the point is that you listened and you valued what we had to do, what we're doing.
Absolutely.
And that really is the difference. And again, we've said this so many times before, and I actually posted at Crooks and Liars last week. The difference between charity and solidarity is really important. If you are unemployed, if you are struggling financially, as someone wrote us and said, in the Tea Party economy, if you're struggling, this podcast is our gift to you.
Yeah,
do
absolutely.
Not send us money.
We don't want your damn money.
No, we don't want your damn money.
Keep it.
We want you to listen and enjoy and get something out of it, and it will work out, because what we're about is solidarity, not about being a fundraising organization. That's not our thing. And we'll all get there that way. That's how we'll get there.
On the other hand. Not about this podcast.
If you're a millionaire.
Oh, yeah. But on the other hand.
Yeah.
And this is sort of the nexus between writing as a profession and mm-hmm. activism as a mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
The reason that straw men never stop coming, that the crappy arguments never stop coming, is that there's just a fuckload of money behind it.
It pays.
There are crackpot right-wing billionaires who are willing to shovel billions of dollars into a black hole at Fox News or Hate Radio or the right-wing blogs or opinion magazines or the American Spectator, on and on and on and on and on, or FreedomWorks or Prosperity.
Our friend Batocchio puts it very succinctly, Team Evil pays.
Team Evil is willing to spend any amount of money and will salvage any awful douchebag career and put him in front of a microphone.
If they're willing to sponsor a bill on clean coal that will that will make the EPA powerless. Yeah.
Or if they're willing to get on a radio and say over and over again that Democrats are traitors, Democrats are monsters.
And both sides. Yeah. Well, and Driftless, I think all of us got a really huge wake-up call this week when the Supreme Court ruled on net neutrality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Which is... we are all sitting here saying the internet is free and I'm just writing my blog and I want people to just come to it and eyeballs are money. You know, our eyeballs are the only thing that matters, when the people at the Supreme Court know that the internet is money.
Yeah.
And that access to the internet is money. And we can, you can sit there and say, we can all sit there and say, oh, no, you know, content is free. Just go ahead. Give when you can, whatever. And there's Team Evil is stealing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right out from under us. So.
And it isn't for a
solution to that, except long term. Get rid of Scalia.
Yeah. Well, get rid of Team Evil. And there's the issue. The issue is then, since you can't solve every problem.
Yeah.
And since you are. I hope people are not, I'm not burning out and saying, because I can't solve everything, I can't solve anything.
Yeah.
What do you pick to work on?
What do you
pick? And how do you apply your energy?
Yeah.
And my big useless expenditure of energy, not useless, but my every,
what's your passion, Driftless?
My passion is putting people to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting people back to work, getting the middle class back to a place.
Trained
sustainable jobs with good benefits,
living
so
wages.
They can have a house and send their kids to college, and to level out the income distribution in this country by growing the middle class and making more jobs available in the middle class. But the chief barrier to any reform I see in front of me, because
the Republican Party.
Well, I've given up on debating with conservatives.
Yeah,
just there's no point in it. They're lost. They're lost souls. They're never coming back. It's the center. It's the place where the crazies on the right are redeemed by false equivalencers who, every time there's a sin committed on the right, they say, yeah, but both sides.
Yep.
Those people can be gotten to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do it, but I know that they're public, they are rich, they control our media, and there are places inside. There are chinks in the wall. There are holes in the armor through which you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, somebody throws an elbow.
Yep.
And
there's a victory.
And there's a victory. But that's the only place I know where you can really go to say, here's where we can stage a fight. The problem is that those people understand the incredible tenuousness of their position. If you put – this is why real conservatives, you know, the true conservatives, the centrist conservatives, the David Brooks conservatives, never debate anybody.
Right.
Because if you put me or Charlie Pierce or really – Digby or anybody on the stage with a David Brooks for 5 minutes, we would destroy them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
they know that.
And they know that.
Yeah.
They know it's bullshit. On some level, they have some vague awareness at a metabolic level that what they're doing is just bullshit. And so there's an entire organized protective league around them that keeps them away from people like me. And the one time I saw that breached in person was when David Brooks was lecturing. And a woman stood up in the audience and asked him about stuff he'd written in the past, and he just lied.
And she had clips of it.
And she asked in a very respectful way, but she said, what you've said tonight is X, and that seems to be irreconcilable to stuff you used to write during the Iraq War. What do you have to say about that? And his answer was, I don't believe I ever wrote anything like that.
Yeah, even though she had the clip in front of her. Yeah,
so
he's just going to lie.
He's just going to lie. And he's going to lie because it doesn't matter, because no one will hold him to account. So the project for liberals is to find out who these people, who their clout is in Chicago speak, and how to make those people suffer, and then apply pressure to those people. I don't know who they are. I don't know how you find them. But to me, that's the only place where you can break this logjam. Because if every debate over public policy ends up with a douchebag on the right and a blue dog Democrat bitching about both sides, nothing is going to be changed. Nothing will ever change.
And on that note, we're at an hour. So,
oh, yeah.
We have a letter from a listener, Marilyn.
Hello, Marilyn.
And Marilyn wrote, "Hello, Blue Gal. We are so appreciative of you and Driftglass. We wish you both a prosperous new year. We started listening to you a few months ago, and now we look forward to your podcasts every Friday. We love your humor, both of you, and I read Driftglass's blog every day now."
Oh.
Oh. Thank you for
She's
always...
the one.
She's the one. You, Marilyn and your mom.
Yeah.
Are your two readers, yeah.
Yeah.
"Thank you for always delivering. With three kids and lives that are busy, I appreciate what it takes, and we hope you know that your work is meaningful and inspiring. You know what I especially like about you two? You like each other, and it shows."
Yeah.
Aw.
Except when you mentioned Liz Cheney in
bed. In bed.
Don't ever do that again.
No, I will never do. I promise, honey.
Or any member of the Cheney family.
Or any member of the Cheney. I will never do that again. Really, you were so close to just going over to the couch. Marilyn continues, "My husband is waiting for a friend at the airport, and he just texted me to say that while he waits, he's listening to Prof Left." Which I am also going to do right now. "Thank you, too, for taking the time to write us back and thank us for our very modest donation." Well, thank you. We really do appreciate it. "You are very special people. Happy 2014, Marilyn." Well, thank you, Marilyn. That was delightful letter. And we do like each other.
Yeah.
We really do. And I think if the past 4 years are any indication, we'll be doing this for a while. We're having fun.
Yeah, until we stop having fun. And then we stop doing this.
And we stop doing this. But so far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I love you, Driftglass.
I love you, too.
"Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is named Smudge. And Smudge has an amazing attitude towards life. His attitude is never stop purring." He purrs all the time. You know, that way they don't know.
That's right.
No one knows what's really going on. If you just keep, are you afraid? Are you happy? Are you what? No, I just keep purring.
Just keep purring, baby. Just keep purring.
Just keep purring.
Uh-huh.
"You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We love hearing from you, so feel free to write us. Be aware, if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise." So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties don't miss Jay Leno at all.
"Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life."
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2014. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Let's do Science Fiction University.
All right.
We have an audio Science Fiction University this week, courtesy of Magnolia ePublishing, our friend Magnolia ePublishing.
Thank you, Magnolia ePublishing.
Yes.
He has been very good to us.
He has been very good to us.
Yes.
So what we have from Magnolia ePublishing is an audio...
All right.
Stump the Chump.
Okay.
And there are 5 recordings.
All right.
Of a science fiction / fantasy author.
All right.
Speaking. That author is speaking. And you have to identify.
Oh, okay.
Impresario or whoever, the personality in the science fiction world. The first one.
"And right now we are going to find out the reason that he walked off a talk show. Was it in Atlanta? Because someone called you a sci-fi writer."
"Well, it was Atlanta and it was New York. It was I was back east a couple of weeks ago doing promotion for the new book."
Harlan Ellison.
You got that one right away.
Yeah, nobody. That's a gimme.
Okay.
Now, to his credit, he doesn't usually do that.
Yeah.
But he has certain well-established buttons that if you push them, he's going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very fine story of I think it was Arizona. Him getting screwed around by local media.
Oh.
And he waited. I mean, it was like some convention there, but they agreed because of the, I think it was the governor's position on the Martin Luther King holiday or something, that they wouldn't spend any money in Arizona.
So they
rented an RV, and it was 179 degrees in the shade.
Ugh.
And the local sheriff, the local law enforcement in the area was a fan or something, and sort of put sacks and bagged the parking meters to let them be there for free. But he agreed to do like local media stuff, and they blew him off for like an hour.
Oh my gosh, and they, in the heat.
Yeah, and they finally showed up. He was on time. He was there. He's, you know, he's usually very media friendly. And he was there for a hell of a long time. And they showed up and he said, "Screw it. You were supposed to be here, you know, an hour ago or 2 hours ago. I don't have time to screw around with you people." And they said, Yeah, but. And then another media van showed up with different markings. He said, No, you're the same people. It's the same station. You just sent quit screwing with me. And apparently one of the people wouldn't leave him alone, and he sort of tossed him down an escalator or something like that. But it was common courtesy. Just first of all, if the person is telling you in advance, look, there are certain subjects that if you ask me a stupid question that irritates me, I'm going to get up and walk out, or I'm going to yell at you. If you then go ahead and ask that question and do it on purpose, don't be surprised when he snaps your head off.
And there are common courtesy things where if you are an hour late or whatever, the first words out of your mouth when you show up are, "I'm sorry."
I'm sorry. You call and you say,
some media people don't do that. They say, "We're here and we're doing you a favor by covering your stuff."
Now,
and that's
because the flip side is he was on the Tom Snyder Show, a dozen times for hours. And he was he's a very good raconteur. He's a very good conversational. He was on the Bill Maher Show repeatedly. So it's not like he's a diva. It's that you have to be polite. And a lot of media people don't know how the hell to do that. And they are the most important person in the room. So, anyway, okay.
All right, the second one. Here we go.
When I was a child, I was a fanatic about Greek mythology. And this was one of my favorite myths. In it, Minos, who is the king of Crete, has a falling out with Athens. Crete is a far more powerful country. Every year, in part of the punishment, Athens has to send seven youths and seven maidens to Crete, where they are thrown into the labyrinth to be devoured by a monster called the Minotaur.
Well, it was a woman talking about mythology, so it wasn't Robert Silverberg.
No, it's not Robert Silverberg.
Jesus, there's so many stories based on female writers. I'd have to go with someone like Anne McCaffrey.
No, it's Susan Collins, who is the author of the Hunger Games book.
Oh,
which,
well, that
you wouldn't know that.
Explains it. I've never read the Hunger Games. I don't know who Susan Collins is. So there's no judgment on her. I just have no idea. Didn't read it.
All right, the third one.
If you show this black girl as an officer dealing with white people on that basis, you're going to be barraged with the hate letters. And whole areas of the country are going to refuse to handle your show. And we often forget that's how the country was then. One thing that makes me love viewers and love the audience is that we never received in 20 years one single letter of that kind.
Do you know who this is?
Black female military officer. I don't.
And he talks about viewers, so that gives you a hint.
Yeah, I would have gone with John Varley, who had a female protagonist in...
Think a little more... middle brow culture network TV.
Oh, TV. Okay. Well, then it's not Ripley from the Alien movies. Nope. It's not Sigourney Weaver.
No. She's not black either.
Babylon 5 had female officers, but I don't think any of them were black. But okay, Star Trek.
That's right.
Lieutenant Uhura.
Gene Roddenberry. That's
right. Yeah, but you know, come on. Her job was to say hailing frequencies open.
I know. She was a secretary on the...
Yeah. She was... And you know, everyone knows the story about her almost quitting.
Yeah. And Martin Luther King told her to stay. Yeah.
Stay, because you have no idea how important you are.
Yeah.
And a generation later, Mae Jemison, NASA astronaut Mae Jemison, credits
Uhura.
Nichelle Nichols with getting her, keeping her interested in spaceflight and science.
Wow.
So, you know.
Yeah.
You never know where those seeds are going to land.
That's right.
even right. though Star Trek isn't science fiction.
Yeah, it's a soap opera. It's a Western in space.
It's a Western in space.
Yeah. Okay, the fourth one.
That there is some deity or some power or some force that sort of controls our destiny or works for good and also works for evil is always been very basic in mankind.
George Lucas.
George Lucas. That one was kind of easy.
Yeah.
Okay. And the last one?
Well, Robbie the Robot, I know you began your lengthy career in Forbidden Planet, followed up with The Invisible Boy, then we're seen in an episode of Columbo, and as a matter of fact, you may remember you and I cameoed in Hollywood Boulevard.
Well, he sounds older. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the older science fiction grandmasters, most of them have passed away. I know it's not Heinlein. Yeah. It could possibly be Arthur Clarke, although I don't see him talking robots. The obvious choice would be Asimov, but it didn't sound like Asimov. I heard Asimov in person, and it's not Asimov. So I genuinely had Paul Anderson or someone like that, maybe.
Forrest Ackerman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Forrest Ackerman, okay.
Thank you very much. That was cool, Magnolia.
Thank you so much. Oh, that was
fun.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Send more audio clips.
There you go. I think I should pull out some of the paperback science fiction books you have.
Yeah.
And read a paragraph to you and see if you can guess. Given that you've read them.
I'm a science fiction fan. I'm not a science fiction Torah scholar. You know, the story where you can the story where you can stick a pin through the Torah.
Yeah.
A true scholar can tell you every character that pin intersects with.
Isn't that
with.
Interesting? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I know people like that, but
yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah, in the science fiction world, you know.
Yeah,
people like
I sure
that.
Do. Yeah.
Yes, of course. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That was fun.